All right, welcome back to your Noise Avocation Podcast. I'm Ryan, here with Jeremy.
Hello, world.
If you're watching on YouTube, this is the first video episode that we've done, so hopefully everything turns out post-edit all good. We've been working on this for like quite a while now, actually, and just made a ton of different studio upgrades, and so we'll be bringing artist interviews all video pretty soon. We got to work a little thing out with that still, but we'll be doing some more episodes with just the two of us.
Yeah, you get to see our fucking smiling faces.
They don't really smile quite as often.
I don't think it will, but hey.
But we tried doing this episode like as an Instagram Live a while back, and Jeremy's computer was having some issues, or his phone was, or they just don't like the way that mine communicates with his or something. And he couldn't see me, and the audio was all screwed up.
So we're going to redo it.
We're going to do it as an actual episode. But we were talking about some of our favorite debuts of all time, and we tried to kind of keep it like not being super common albums. I mean, there's going to be a couple in there that are obvious, or you've heard us talk about like a million times, like Jeremy's shirt he's wearing.
Yeah, dude, just get that out of the way, you know. But...
But I kind of tried to add in things that were like, ones. I want you to hear this type of thing. Like, this is a great record. This was their first album. Some of you guys will know them. Some of you won't. But, Jeremy, I'll let you start because I know you're going to get your obvious one out of the way.
Okay, yeah, Warzone. Don't forget the struggle. Don't forget the streets. But it's the only hardcore album on this list. Like, I purposefully did that. Just to give more variety, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like,
well, I was kind of like playing my list off of your list. I was thinking I might keep this off because Jeremy might have it. Like, I didn't put Joy Division on because I thought you would probably have it. But then again, since you were trying to be not as obvious, you might not.
Here's the other stipulation with it. The debut album has to be better than the rest of the discography. So, in that case, there's a lot that I didn't pick. And it's a good thing because it means the band got better, at least in my opinion.
Well, a couple of mine would be, I wouldn't say they were better, but
you prefer
up there
them.
With, like, my favorite.
Right. Yeah. That's how I went about it with...
Like, I didn't put 36 Chambers on there.
Neither did I.
Because I felt that was kind of implied.
Biggie.
But if I go by that, I wouldn't have put my main one on there, but I had to. It's the greatest fucking album ever. I didn't put Biggie on there. I just kind of tried to, mix it up with genres and shit.
Yeah,
which I'm glad you did because I was kind of expecting a bunch of hardcore albums that I was like, well,
dude,
I've heard this one. But then a lot of times I'm like writing shit down because I'm like, I don't know, this band.
I don't even have any metal on my list.
Oh, I got some metal.
And it was...
Well, now I'm curious to hear your shit
because I
don't know.
It was hard for me, again, because I'm like, all right, dude, I love this album, but the fucking third one is tits, dude. Like, you know what I mean? It's hard. So I just like, I'm going to really fucking... And you said you're going to throw some zingers or whatever. So I'm like, I'll throw some fucking zingers, dude, you know?
Well, I had a couple honorable mentions that I would like to get out of the way, actually, before you start your first.
Okay.
Kill Whitney Dead's Inhaling the Breath of a Bullet, I was going to put on there. If you're unfamiliar with Kill Whitney Dead for whatever reason, if you're a movie fan and you're just a fan of heavy shit in general, like, definitely check that band out. And I think they're doing some vinyl reissues of the catalog coming out.
They have news tomorrow. There's a
at the day
supposed
of
supposed to drop something tomorrow.
Yeah, and I know Matt's working on
reissuing. Or at the day of this, you guys will hear this.
Yeah, Matt's working on reissuing the whole catalog, but I don't know what he's starting with.
It'll be interesting.
Yeah, for sure. I would like to say Black Sabbath's first record. It's not my favorite album of theirs, but it is... Definitely top three, one of their best records. It kind of helped define their sound. But I left it off because it was sort of an obvious one.
That's what I did with Terror's first album.
Yeah.
Which I believe I held up and couldn't even see myself or whatever when we did the live thing. But that's it. Like, I left that off because
that's
kind of obvious, too.
I could see you hold it up.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. And that was, I left that off, but I brought it. But that's like an honorable mention I have. And then, like we said earlier, there's so many
Nine Inch Nails, Pretty albums. Hate Machine would have been another one that was pretty fucking close to making mine. But a lot of people know that, so I was trying to keep it a little lesser known.
Yeah, okay. Yep. So, yeah, there's a few honorable mentions, but...
Oh, Freya Riding's first record, too. See, these are going to be all over the place.
So. I'll give you one last weird one that I left off the list because... I'm torn. It's not always my favorite out of their discography, and it was Bauhaus's first album.
Yeah, it is great, but I like the following more.
Yeah, so I brought it, but I didn't. It's hard to pick them, dude. It's hard to pick them.
Go ahead with I Seen You Pull a Record Up There.
Yeah, I brought the Warzone record up just to show it. This is the Revelation Records. Pressing like repress from a few years ago, but actually it's from 2016, so I don't know, time goes by fucked up. I thought it was like 2022, but came out in 87.
I feel basically like they changed my life quite a bit.
This was the first reissue in a long ass time on Revelation. Like up until this I had it on a CD that was like split with the second album, Open Your Eyes, and so that was cool, but this album's fucking life-changing, and a lot of people, I mean, this is on a lot of people's lists that are into hardcore, you know?
Yeah, I seen, like, a video of Scott Vogel talking about that and Leeway, and he threw some newer band at the end, though, because he was like, this doesn't stand, you know, as best of all time, but he's like, I want him to get noticed, so I thought that was cool.
That's cool. Yeah, I mean, the intro bust, It's Your Choice. Even like, all the lyrics in here are, like, very motivational and, you know, real-life situations. And, like, it's positive, but it's not, like, cheesy positive. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, it's not, like, good vibes only type of thing.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
It's like a... be true to yourself and the like, people the around you type of shit
as one like in the it's almost like honestly it's like there was a like a commandments or something to that to hardcore or like a Bible you could probably use
at least half the record
if not that more record to
actually
be
you
like,
probably could make it it could be the
take
the
lessons
standard.
Right to take lessons from
the writing in the stone
so yeah. That's probably, and that's like an obvious one for me, but like I said, I was like,
I'm gonna get
a shirt. Fuck yeah, dude.
My obvious one is, we've talked about it a million times too, but Nas Illmatic.
Yep, that's, I left it off. That's my favorite Nas album too.
Yeah, I mean, you knew I was gonna put it on there just by default. We've talked about it 100 times. If for some reason you're unfamiliar, I mean, you really need to do your homework because... there's no reason that you should not know that record if you're a hip-hop fan. It sort of, like, embodies all of New York at that time. And, you know, the area that Nas grew up in, all that shit. Like, albums like that, like the infamous Mobb Deep, Hell on Earth, Mobb Deep. All that stuff that came out, like, early 90s, before pre-95, like, really painted a picture for how shit was at that time.
Yeah, and now it's good. I mean, that album has sold a lot of copies. A lot of people know it now, and that's, like, a good thing, man, because that is...
I was going to bring in all three covers, but I was like, never mind.
But, again, it's, like, perfect storytelling of what was going on then. Yeah. And then you mentioned Mobb Deep, and that's another one where it's like, it's the second album, man.
Yeah, well, Juvenile Hell was their first.
Right.
And it was good, but it wasn't... I mean, the infamous, that like, changed shit. Like, that was their Illmatic.
Sure.
But to their credit, like, when Juvenile Hell came out, they were, like, 15 or something. Like, they were super young. I mean, you look at them on the cover, they're just, like,
they're kids. The crisscross and shit.
Yeah. They just got normal pants. They're on the right way,
Shit's funny.
Backs aren't the fronts. All right, what do you got next?
My next one is on a CD because I don't have it on a record, and it is Dropkick Murphys' Do or Die.
I would not have expected that to be on there.
Dude, solid fucking album. It's my favorite because it has the original singer. Came out in 97, but I didn't hear it till a little later on, probably 99-ish, 2000 maybe. But every track on here is fucking a banger, a killer.
That's one of those bands that, like, now that I don't really drink all that often,
right,
it's harder for me to listen to because it's, like, really good drinking music.
No, I will say this. This is the only Dropkick album that I listen to. Like, The Gang's All Here is okay. I'll play that every now and then.
That would have been, I mean, aside from, like, Taylor Swift or something, that would have been, like, the last thing I expected to be on your list because I know between, like, you just dumped a bunch of Flogging Molly.
Yep.
And, like, Dropkick Murphys are kind of in that same realm. But, you know,
but like,
Real McKenzies and shit like that.
But it's, like, in this, the punk rock aspect on this one, there's more of it than the Irishness on this album to me. But there's still a lot of fucking street working man Irishness to it that I love.
Well, that was, like, the mentality, like, that they were going for.
Like,
they were trying to re-embody that time. And that was how it was there, too. I mean, if you've watched, like, I don't know, Peaky Blinders and shit like that, like, you know, like, that time era was, like, a real working class type of...
Yeah, dude.
It's almost like here. I mean, it's factories and shit. Like, that's what you had. That's what you grew up around. Like, that's where you were expected to go after high school.
Yeah, and the shit's fucked for the birds, man. But, like, track four on here, Never Alone, that's like that I remember listening to that, and it, like, you know, that's an empowering song, you know, when you're hanging out with your friends and shit.
Yeah.
And that's kind of like what that's all about. And it's like a positive, it's, again, you know, like you said, it's the working class thing. But there's a song on here about the singer, I believe it's Faraway Coast. Yeah, duh. And it's about him going off to war, and they will not do that song live. Like, only he does it because it's his song, and he's the only one that experienced that.
Gotcha.
Which I always thought was cool, you know?
Yeah, I mean, that's commendable.
Yeah, it's like, that's not my shit to sing or whatever.
Maybe the song would be huge, though, if they did do it.
Yeah, and it's crazy, though, how that band is now, right? Like, fucking, when they got on the Departed soundtrack, I was like, oh, shit, man, they just hit it big.
It fit on there, though.
Oh, yeah, it's like, perfect. Perfect. And that was 2006.
That came out, yeah. Yep.
18 years. What's your next one?
My next one is Pharaoh Monch's Internal Affairs.
That was one that I was thinking of picking, too, but I was like, I know you're gonna.
Well, technically, like, Organized Confusion would have been his debut, but as a solo artist, this was his debut. And Pharaoh Monch, to me, like, he's one of my favorite rappers just because nobody sounds like him. Like, nobody has that style of flow. It's almost, like, preachy, kind of, in a way, like,
the way
he enunciates his words. And, like, if you're familiar with Brother Ali, which I know you are, that's where he got a lot of his cadence from, like, the way that he raps and everything.
Okay.
And because I know, like, that he's big into him. Same with Apathy. Like, Apathy, I know, is definitely a huge Pharaoh Monch fan. But one thing that I like about Pharaoh Monch is he's asthmatic, but, like, he raps and you can't tell because, like, he has amazing breath control. Like, he'll follow out just, you know, 8 to above and beyond bars.
I didn't know he was asthmatic.
Yeah. Well, he has, like, a line in a song that says when he rhymes, you never believe he's asthmatic, that type of thing.
Oh, okay. I guess that makes sense.
If you listen to that 13 album, you can hear in some of the songs where he really, like, takes it there, he'll start, like, having, like, a little shortness of breath, and you can hear it in the recording, but it sounds cool because...
Yeah, I thought that was an effect.
No, that's his voice.
That's gnarly.
And there is a lot of vocal effects on there, too, so it might not be his voice in the particular thing you're talking about.
Right.
But if you hear him start to run out of breath a little bit, like, that's, you know, he has asthma.
Legit thing.
The guy's a phenomenal wordsmith. Like, he ties some shit together that you're like, how the fuck did you even rhyme that with that?
I feel he's underrated nowadays. I mean, and I guess maybe that's a hip-hop thing, but I don't feel you hear enough about him.
Not really. Eminem did shout him out one time, said that Pharoah Monch was like the king of the underground. And I think that brought him like a lot of notoriety. Oh, but like, cool. He's one of those instances where like, if you know, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
And those who know love it. But if you don't know, like, you're just a little too late to the game.
Right.
It's almost kind of like Common. Like, he's a rapper's rapper.
Yeah,
he's definitely. He's not just somebody that you're going to throw on in the car, even though I do. But he's not like a club song. The shit makes you think, or it sets a story, tells a story, puts you in a place and time.
Well, yeah, he's doing it for like art's sake and to say something. He's not trying to fucking shake your ass and make a buck that way. I think it's like has actual respect for him as an artist, you know?
Yeah, and he has, it's not on that record, but there's a song that he has that's all from the point of view of a bullet. And I just like the way it's written. Like, nobody that I've heard has written anything like that. And it's just a really cool point of view for a song.
That's what's up.
What do you got next?
My next one is a hip-hop album. Actually, I'll just get this other CD one out of the way. My other CD one is DMX, It's Dark and Hell is Hot. And I almost didn't grab it, but, dude, I fucking love this album when it came out. Like, I mean, I was a kid. I was like 12, 13. What was it, 98? Yeah. I was like, so this had a big, like, negative effect on me. And I thought it was, you know what I mean? Like, this shit was hilarious. Like, I wanted a crotch rocket, you know, and all that shit. I wanted
because all the Rough Riders videos.
Yeah, dude, those videos shit was so hard. But, you know, now that I'm older and you, like, you think about it, this shit was, it's like, and it still is. Yeah, like all the Puffy shit was big at that time. And then DMX comes out.
DMX was like the more street bad boy kind of. Yeah,
like he was like a legit, I go to jail, I smoke crack, life's fucked up.
And he like.
And you just sing about
it. He pretty much lived that until he died.
Right.
But yeah, that was his mentality. It's like, you might rap about this shit, but I live this shit.
And like, it's like, this was like the number one album. I mean, it sold a shit ton of copies, but it's that good.
Well, we were talking about that, how he had two number one albums in the same year.
Yeah, in the same year.
Yeah. But I looked that up later on. I know, like, I want to say Led Zeppelin did it. There was, like, 8 or 9 other artists had it, like, right consecutively, like, in the same year.
Maybe he was the first hip-hop person to do it. I think he was the first hip-hop artist to do it.
Either him or Jay-Z.
Oh, it would have been, he would have been the first to do it before Jay-Z because 98 and Jay-Z had what?
2 records.
But not in the same year.
Led Zeppelin, DMX, Jay-Z, Garth Brooks, Tupac, and System of a Down are the only artists that had.
DMX was first. Over Jay-Z, I'm saying.
Well, I don't know if he is or not. It doesn't.
Thought it was an order. Yeah, like these are not in order. It's just a random order. These are not like in any order for me. But
either way, I mean, fucking huge. Like that hasn't even like you would think like Drake or somebody's done that by now. Like
yeah, you would think. I mean, but he's kind of singles world now too.
It's the singles world, and they put shit out, and then like I don't know. A lot of artists will do where they kind of appease to shorter attention spans. So they put out a record that's only 25, 30 minutes versus one that's about an hour long. And some people say that 40 minutes is the perfect length for a record.
Depends what the music is.
It depends on what it is, though. Like, if you got a prog record, 40 minutes is short. But it could be the perfect length for a hip-hop record. It could be the perfect length for a rock album of some sort. I don't know. I'm sure there's a ton of albums is the perfect length, but I was looking and I was like, okay, I'm going to look through some of my favorite albums. And a lot of them are like an hour or more, but I will say if I get a hip hop record that's like 38 songs and it's like an hour and a half long, it's too long.
Yeah. See,
just release it as 2 albums.
Anything that 40 minutes to me is a fucking long time in most of the stuff that I listen to,
Well, that's because you're coming from, like, punk and hardcore demos right, were so, 14 minutes to 20
yeah,
minutes.
Yeah, it's like whole like record, this, 15 minutes. Yeah, it's like, holy shit. But honestly.
It's like 19 songs.
like to me, I like the half hour to 45 minutes, honestly, as far as listening. But yeah.
It depends on what it is.
It depends what it is, yeah, for sure. If it's jazz, man, that's like a whole another topic or whatever. Which I did leave. I have no jazz on here. I was going to put Lee Morgan.
My issue with jazz was it was hard to find a lot of their first records because, like, some of them are so rare that I don't have them or, like, dated so far back.
Right.
Like, Miles Davis's debut was, like, way the fuck back. Like,
yeah, you're talking in, like, the 40s.
Yeah, and I think it's... some of his first stuff was on 78. I don't know. I'm sure his first album was a 33, but it was like in the dawn of the age of 33.
Yeah.
So I don't have it. And there was a lot of stuff like I was thinking Marvin Gaye, but I'm like, fuck, Marvin Gaye was doing doo-wop in like the late 50s before he even got linked up with Motown.
Yeah, yep.
So, because like What's Going On would definitely make a list, but that wasn't a debut.
Oh,
like,
that's
that was
way down
the road.
Yeah, for sure.
Quincy Jones was another one that I kind of looked at. Like I have Quincy's
way
like
back too.
I have his like third record,
mm-hmm.
and he's young on it. But I've never even seen the first one.
I have not.
All right. Well, actually, I'm gonna save you. I'm gonna get my last hip hop one out of the way.
Okay.
So the last hip hop one I had was Dayton Family's "What's on My Mind," which I feel like is definitely a lesser known album outside of the Midwest area.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I know there's a lot of people that have heard it Michigan wise, but like anybody listening outside of this, you know, tri-state area, Ohio, Michigan, Indiana, etc. If you haven't heard this came out in 1992. And a lot of people put like their favorite albums from 92, from 96, and you know, all the 90s ages. But I've never once seen Dayton Family on those lists.
And no, it maybe it is only like a Midwest thing, but that album's fucking amazing.
Because I've talked to
and we knew about
people
it when we
all
were kids.
Around. Yeah, like, I don't know. I heard Flint Town when I was like, I don't know, 12, 11,
yeah,
something
about,
like that.
Yeah, for sure.
And
I was
in
junior high and I heard that. 94,
that was off this
that's
record.
Crazy.
But I think since they were primarily Flint and not Detroit, that was a lesser known area, especially at the time, like before the water crisis, it wasn't a household name.
Right.
Like outside of Michigan, you didn't
really know
Flint.
Yeah, no, yeah. Only we knew that Flint was a fucking, no offense to all my Flint people, but.
Yeah, you were going to say shithole.
No, I was going to say.
It's got some rough areas for sure. But, I mean, it's a city, it's going to happen. But this.
But that's your favorite Dayton Family album, too?
No.
Oh, I was going to say.
That was the one that broke the criteria
rule?
For
okay.
that. FBI is my favorite.
I was going to say that's my favorite, too, FBI.
But this
shit.
Is a very, I mean, you could tie them pretty much.
Yeah.
And I will say this record sounds awful, though. I have the tape of it, and the tape sounds better, and that is almost never the circumstance.
The yeah, I remember when you
I wish
you
I had a
that.
CD, but I can't fucking find one. Same with FBI. I have a tape. If anybody has the CD, I'll buy it. If anybody has a record, I'll buy it. But I'm not paying you $1 million for it because I've seen a lot. And I'm
thinking it'll probably be, now that you say that.
Yeah. I'm thinking it'll probably be not the greatest quality. But this copy is actually signed by a bootleg of the group. And I was thinking of sending it to Shoestring to try to have him like re-sign the other side. But I don't even know how to get in touch with the dude. So I found this on eBay like years ago. Like I didn't actually meet Bootleg, but I was scrolling through looking at Dayton Family shit, found this. It had a picture of Bootleg signing the actual record.
Yeah, that's sick. It's Michigan shit, dude. It's like
yeah,
we're addicted
it was from
to
some
it.
Guy in Michigan.
You know, definitely.
But this record's like, I don't know, it goes for about $120-ish.
Yeah, it's pretty
but
rare.
But it's like a cutout, and it's rare, like, because they only did it the one time. Like, that was...
But it sucks that it sounds like shit.
It does, but it's awesome to have it.
No,
and the fact that it's autographed. Like, I think I paid $85 for it, I think.
Oh, that's... If it's under $100, dude, you're fucking golden.
I
hear people paying, like, $300 for used T-shirts, dude.
Nah, fuck that.
Exactly.
Because the T-shirts that you're spending $300 on are old... And I get it that some of them are hard to find. If you kept them in good condition, cool. But a lot of times, like, you go to wear one of those fucking T-shirts, and it's got, like, 800 holes by the bottom. There's a hole in the armpit. It's all, like, 18 shades lighter of black.
When we were, shout out to Jason Zilikowski, when we were at Tide Down, we were, like, playing, like, a little, like, oh, I wonder, oh, he's younger than when that fucking band shirt came out. Like, there was a lot of it, dude. It's like, and in my mind, I'm
vintage,
like,
clothes are a huge
I want
thing.
Fucking brand new shit. Like, I sold my shit to get fresh shit. Yeah. You know, it's crazy.
Especially when it comes to white shirts. Because white yellows after a while. And
fuck
once,
yeah, it does.
Like, I have this awesome Wu-Tang shirt, but it's all yellowed, and I never wear it because it looks gross to me. But, like, I don't want to get rid of it because it's dope, but I don't want to wear it because it looks... I don't know, dingy.
Yeah. Like, looks like it's fucking moldy and...
Yeah. Bleh. And I've tried, like, vinegaring it and doing all the lady tricks, but and it'll get it a little bit out, but it's just so old that it's...
Now, if you bleached it, would it fucking
I think it'll fuck up the print.
Or fuck up the print? Okay. Yeah.
Because it's all colored. Like, the whole frontal of the shirt is all color print.
Yeah, so I wouldn't do it either. Yeah.
I don't want it to, like, break down.
Yeah. No, for sure.
What do you got next?
My next one may be on your list. I'm not sure. But it is Iggy Pop's The Idiot.
I was going to bring it, but it's not.
It's not on your list?
No.
Okay.
It was for like 10 minutes.
For 10 minutes? Okay, and this is my favorite Iggy record. This version here. Is from like Four Men with Beards. Sounds like not very good.
I have an OG of it.
Yeah, I know you have a normal one. But, dude, I don't. This album is just Sister Midnight and fucking it's this like put Iggy back. I can't believe it came out on RCA for one, like,
that
he got on there. But, Nightclubbing, there's a lot of dope tracks
is
on
that
here.
The
China Girl.
How many songs did Bowie produce on there? Most of it, didn't
all
he?
Of them, I believe, on I this thought. First one.
Yeah. They were, because Bowie covered China Girl, like, on another record.
Right,
down the road.
And the rumor
a lot of people
is,
don't know that, though.
Really?
I feel like most people think China Girl's a Bowie song.
Yeah, definitely, because it was on, like, a huge record.
Yeah.
But what I heard from reading was... What is it? Yeah, I know. I got it all screwed up. Anyway, here's this fucking record. But I did read that, Iggy wrote it. That's what they're saying. But Bowie put it in Iggy's name. And then when he put it on his fucking record, all the rights are in Iggy's name. So that's how Iggy stayed afloat.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he did him a favor. Like, I'm gonna put this in your name. Like, so...
Well, because they did, like,
three
records.
That's a little unknown thing,
three
too.
Records together on each other's sides. Like,
right.
Iggy helped Bowie with a bunch of albums. All the Berlin years.
Yep. And then, see, that's the other... Lust for Life is also a fucking dope-ass album.
I even
and
like
that's another
blah,
Bowie
blah,
one.
Blah, even though it's kind of poppy.
Yeah.
But I thought it was cool.
No, I like a lot. That's just my favorite one.
Picture of Iggy Pop in dad jeans on there.
Yep.
Because it was like 84
or
something.
I have
like
it on.
That.
I have that on cassette, I believe. And since you mentioned Joy Division, that is the album that Ian Curtis killed himself to.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up before we got to the next. Imagine having that copy.
Yeah, I thought about that before.
I wonder who has it.
I would imagine his wife probably destroyed it. At least that's what I'd do with it if I was in her position. Because, you know, I mean...
Yeah, it would be a constant reminder.
Yeah, or even any of that music.
But I don't know, I don't know, man. I might keep it, but I don't know, it'd have to be...
I'm just
you don't know if you're not in that
I'd
position.
I'd be like, I never want to fuck you, Iggy, I never want to see you again. Like,
yeah,
you know?
No, but it's not like it's his fault.
No, it's not. I'm just saying, like, I would have gotten rid of the record, probably. So, right.
But if it were from the outside in, as a collector...
Oh, that would be insane.
That's like the equivalent to having that
Lennon
copy.
Yeah, I think it'd be even cooler to have the Joy Division one. But
doesn't Elton John or something have that copy? Somebody bought it at an auction, I thought.
I'm not. I know it sold for like an enormous amount of money. I'm not sure how much.
It was a lot.
Who bought it?
I thought it was
like
$8 million
or some crazy shit like that.
I thought it was rumored to be Elton John, but maybe not.
Either way, yeah, from a collector's standpoint, that's like some holy grail stuff right there.
Oh yeah, that's gold.
Gold, gold. But yeah, Iggy. I mean, and I kind of used our rule of like, well, that's the solo work instead of going with the Stooges.
Because the Stooges, I mean, that's been. I feel like more lists have that first 1969 album or the self-titled one. But,
yeah, and,
you know,
and that's not my favorite Stooges record.
No, I like Raw Power or Funhouse more.
Yeah, me too. What do you? What's your next one?
My next is Tracy Chapman's first record, which everybody knows Fast Car. That's a common song.
Yep.
But I think like the rest of the record is a million and one times better than Fast Car. Fast Car is like a cutesy love song and whatever. And it's a well-written song. It's good. But like if you get to songs like...
You think Fast Car is a cutesy love song?
Kind of. I mean, it's a song about like... There's sadness to it, but it's also a love story.
I guess I took it. I didn't take it as a happy song, I guess.
I always took
but
it
I
as
never
like
dug
two
way
people,
deep into Tracy Chapman either. But that song
sounds sad as
fuck to me. I always
took it like two people
getting
out of a bad situation.
And I take it as two people thinking about getting out of a bad situation, and they're stuck in the bad situation. But
yeah.
I like talking like how people... hear things differently and perceive them like that differently, you know what I mean?
Across the Lines, though, like that was a song that dealt with like all of segregation and stuff.
Yeah,
like,
now you're talking shit I have no idea about, so go ahead.
So Across the Lines is on the album too, and it's a song that talks about like how when there was like black and white drinking fountains and stuff like that.
Yeah,
wouldn't have gotten radio play because there's some like really graphic shit in there, and it's just not and that's why I mean about Fast Car is like you can hum along, sing along to it. It's a little more upbeat, and the lyrical content isn't as dark.
Yeah, you're like the melody of it is.
Whereas
like...
a lot of other things on the album deal with like racism, domestic violence, like fucking child abuse.
Heavy
like,
shit.
I mean, it covers everything. And I know like when she made the record, she was tried convincing her not to make it an acoustic album, and she was like, I'm making it how I want to, like you either take it how it is or don't. And I'm sure later down the road they were like, damn, I'm glad we listened to her, but I know it was like a fight at the time.
Now would you consider her a one-hit wonder?
No, but I think a lot of people do consider her a one-hit wonder. But she had easily two hits because Gimme One Reason was huge.
Right, right.
And then Fast Car was huge too.
I forgot about Gimme One Reason.
And then Crossroads was another big one.
I don't remember that.
That was off the second record. But, I mean, yeah, she had hits, but I think her hits overshadow the other pieces of the catalog.
Oh, from what you just told me, definitely.
If you go and listen to the album, like just when you go home, listen to Across the Lines, and you'll be like, holy shit, this is vivid and dark.
Yeah.
I think more people who know and love Tracy Chapman need to like go and listen to the whole record if you haven't, because the writing that you all love from Fast Car only expands and gets better throughout the rest of the record.
Yeah, it's heavy.
All right, go ahead next.
Okay, another hip hop one.
I finished my hip-hop.
And I left the rapping on because it's a pain in the ass to get it off. But the Grave Digger's first album.
You're going to have a fucked up glare on that record no matter what.
Yeah, because it was already shiny.
It's Mylar or whatever.
Can you kind of see it?
You can see it. It's just a big glare. You're
okay.
Good.
Well, dude, there's like two other albums that they did after that have the same name, but...
Don't even sound like
no,
it.
No, and like the RZA is not in it. It's almost like a whole nother group.
I think he just let them keep the name.
Yeah.
And then they kind of tried to go after it. I don't even know if RZA was involved in the ones after that.
As far as I know, no. You know what I mean? I don't think he'd produced anything. Because the only other one I have is the third one. And if anybody wants it, let me know. DM me, dude. I can sell it to you. But
is it worse than anything?
I don't know. This invented like fucking horrorcore, as they call it, but basically murder music in a hip hop form.
Yeah.
But yeah, 6 feet deep. Fucking sick, dude. Everybody can see it just fine. Yeah, yeah. Cups of Blood's on here. It's just graphic, funny hip hop. Puts, you know, I don't know. You got to be in the right mood, I guess, for it, honestly, because of the like graphic nature of some of the shit.
Yeah, it's not like a Sunday driving with the family record.
But it is. To me, it's a fun record, and the work, like the wordsmithing, is amazing. It's like it's Wu-Tang but darker. You know what I mean? Sick ass beats.
It's like horror Wu-Tang, basically. Horror Wu-Tang. I mean, RZA.
Perfect.
RZA bleeds Wu-Tang. Everything he puts his fucking hands on, like there's a tinge of it there.
So yeah, I really I love that one. That came out in '94.
What do you have next?
My next is The Police's first record, Outlandish D'Amour, which actually this is my favorite Police record.
That was one I was going to bring too, but I didn't because I knew you would.
Yeah. They didn't have a bad album.
No, they didn't.
I do. There is like a few other versions of this where the Police right here, like I've seen a yellow one, I've seen a green one.
Oh, mine's red too.
Yeah. But I think the red is the first like original one, and then they kind of did a couple random covers after that. Oh, okay. I don't have the yellow or green. If I see them, like I would like to buy them just cause.
To have them, yeah.
But this is like the more like they had a lot of reggae influence in this one, and it was the more not really punky, but a little more quicker tempo, less sort of radio hits that they were known for down the road.
Way more like a reggae and, like you said, like rawer sound, I would say.
Yeah, for sure. And, I mean, Roxanne was the hit off here, obviously, but, I mean, So Lonely was a great song. Can't Stand Losing You.
Can't Stand Losing You is probably the standout to me on that album.
Yeah, that's my favorite track on the record. Born in the 50s, it's a cool song. I like the nostalgia to it, but I would say to me that's sort of the weaker song on the album, just because maybe it's because I wasn't born in the 50s. I'm sure somebody who was like, fuck yeah, me too.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, the Police, I mean, they didn't have a bad record in their whole catalog. Even the only song that the Police had that I skip is that one song on Synchronicity where he's like, everything that I do always reminds me of my mother again or whatever.
Okay.
And he's going all psycho throughout the song. It just gets fucking annoying when he's like...
Yeah, I know, exactly.
It's like that Michael Jackson song on Off the Wall where he's crying. I think it's the last track.
Yeah, that's fucking silly too.
It kind of like ruins the rest of the record.
I also don't listen to Every Breath I Take anymore off of Synchronicity.
It's just way overplayed.
And that's why. I'm not saying it's a bad song. It's just I don't want to hear it anymore. Yeah. I don't have to. But, yeah.
Go ahead with your next.
This is, like, probably my most way left field one.
Okay.
And it is my favorite one out of this person, artist's catalog. Dwight Yoakam.
Oh, that is way
Guitar and Cadillacs, dude. The most punk rock fucking.
I've heard you talk
ever.
About that record actually
I fucking
before,
love it, dude. Honky Tonk Man and Guitars and Cadillacs were like the two.
I know Guitars hits off and of Cadillacs,
it. And the like the words to them are so tight, dude. Because it's just he has an awesome voice for like a male singer, and he kind of just at the time. It's like Brooks and Dunn and, you know, all that kind of shit. Who was the other? I don't know my country from that time very well, honestly. I'm sorry.
Dwight Yoakam. What year did it come out
this
in?
This came out in 19... I got to look at my list. How do I know? 86. But okay. Self-released this album in 84. Or 85.
Okay, so it got a label debut in 86.
Right, but if you have
the one have a different cover?
Nope, it's the same thing. But if you have the one that he put out, might have a little money. But he covered Ring of Fire on it.
I think like George Strait was probably big around that time.
That's okay. Yeah, that's who I'm trying to think of. Those kind of people, I guess.
Garth Brooks probably was
86.
Yeah, Garth Brooks was a little later, but I feel like he probably had some shit in the 80s too. But definitely like George Strait.
But just like even how he dressed, dude. Nobody dressed like that.
Yeah. And
tucked their boots in the Bakersfield sound he was bringing back, which was like Buck Owens and shit.
Plus the old Cadillac's really cool.
Oh yeah, and I used to collect guitars, or at least try to, you know. I mean, this shit's cool. And then that's all he talks about is collecting guitars, Cadillacs, and fucking hillbilly music, dude. And then...
I would not expect it to be on your list at all.
I love this record, man. I'll crank this bitch. Also, Bury Me, that's a duet with this woman, Maria McKee. That's really fucking cool, too. So, I tell you, like, the producers and all that kind of stuff, but I know nothing about these dudes.
Yeah, that's going back further than... Well, I shouldn't say back further than I know. That's just out of my
area of expertise. Fucking rock and roll, dude.
Since we're recording on Father's Day, I had to put some fucking dad rock in here with Boston's first album.
Nice.
This is, like... one of my test records, like when you're setting up a new stereo and you want to hear if everything's dialed in right, this particular is a Wally cut, which if you're
familiar, Wally's awesome.
Wally Troggitt, he did like a bunch of Iron Maiden stuff, and he's a world-renowned fucking sound engineer.
If you find Wally in the Dead Wax,
yeah, it's a little in the center.
It'll say Wally.
Yep, it'll say Wally. A lot of these are Wally cuts, and even the ones that aren't, they still sound pretty damn good. But the Wally in particular, it's like the equivalent to like the RL Led Zeppelin 2 type of thing.
Yeah.
Like the mastering is just outstanding. Some of this stuff on the album, it's a little overplayed or overheard. Like, I mean, More Than a Feeling, we've all heard like a billion times. But Peace of Mind is awesome. Smoking's a lot of fun. Something About You, like the whole record is... it's a great album. It's not something that I put on all the time or anything like that, but like I said, it is a test record that I use.
So the mix is just like that good?
Because I'm real familiar with it, so I know what to listen for. So if like I'm doing a home theater installation or something, this would be one of the things that I would test on it.
Gotcha.
Because I know like, okay, this like high frequency should sound like this, or this mid should sound like that. So you can kind of pinpoint where your stereo needs to be. And it's just a fun record in general anyways. But everything after that album, like, I didn't care for Boston 2, 3, anything after that.
I'm not a Boston guy.
And I've tried, like, I love their album covers. Like, I didn't know this for a long time, but this, like, spaceship thing.
Yeah, that shit
there,
looks cool as fuck.
But it's a guitar.
Yeah.
And then, like, the second one, they did a guitar on there, too. And I don't know, I just thought the artwork was really cool. But for years, I didn't notice that that was a guitar on there.
Yeah, I had to have somebody show me that, too, like, a few years back.
Yeah, it's like on that Motorhead Sacrifice album where he's got his tongue's a dick.
Yeah.
I didn't notice that for a long time. Yeah,
and now you can't unsee it.
Yeah, every time you look at it, it's front like, and center. Yeah. But you would think you would notice it any other time because it's so obvious, but
you just don't look at
that detail. Yeah, you're not, like, looking to Motorhead for dick.
Yeah, dude. Let me keep it in your pants, bro.
All right, what do you got next?
One more rap, and then I will be done with the hip-hop. Run DMC's first record. I love it. Sucker MCs, I loved, actually heard that done by the Wu-Tang Clan on the first compact disc I ever purchased, which was in the beginning there was Rap, which is a mixed album where everybody that was popular at the time, or not even popular, but like, they were popular, all covered different songs.
Run DMC was huge.
Well, it was like Run DMC was on there, Wu-Tang was on there, Snoop Dogg, Puffy, Eric B. and Redman, or Eric Sermon, I'm sorry. But anyway, Sucker MCs is on here. It's just a more raw-sounding album. The drum machine, I mean, it just sounds like a straight 808 with just some breaks, you know. It's Hard Times Rockbox, Jam Master Jay, that song's on here. It's just a good all-around fucking old-school hip-hop record, man.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of, like, set the standard for the sound at that time, really.
And
I mean,
everybody was trying to be records, not Def Jam. Like, I know a lot of people think they're on Def Jam, but this was on Profile Records.
Yep. The first few albums were on Profile.
So, I don't really have any farther to go with that. You know, I mean, it's Run DMC. If you haven't heard of Run DMC, I don't know, man.
You must live under a rock or something. Yeah, I have had that happen, actually. There was a kid that came in. Probably doesn't listen to this, so, but he came in and he was like, hey, do you guys have any hip-hop? I'm like, typically I don't have a lot of newer hip-hop because I'm not as knowledgeable with it.
And it's hard to come by around these parts, even old youth stuff.
Yeah,
just don't
and
see
like,
it.
I don't know. I know that people love like 21 Savage and shit. I don't know what records they buy that like that.
Right, right.
Like, so, this kid come in, he's asking for hip-hop. I showed him, like, Run DMC, Wu-Tang, et cetera, Mobb Deep, all that
stuff. I got
stuff.
A funny feeling where this
and
is
And he
going.
Was like, I've never heard of Run DMC. And I was like, holy shit. But, I mean, he was, I don't know, maybe 16 or something. So I guess I get it, but, like...
We need to run a summer camp, dude.
I know, but if you've listened to or just watched anything based around hip-hop, like a VH1 special... that Hip Hop Evolution thing that they had on Netflix years ago.
Yeah, I mean,
anything that talks about the history of hip hop, I guarantee it mentions Run DMC.
It has to.
So I'm like, man, how's this guy not heard of Run DMC? But I guess.
I mean, shit, dude, I'm wearing Adidas.
That shows an age thing, though, I guess.
Yeah, like, that's true. I don't know.
My next one is Majesty's Vast Reaches Unclaimed.
I had a feeling you were going to do that one.
I mean, the poster's behind me, too. We interviewed these guys, like, a while back. I should have looked at the episode number beforehand. I want to say it's, like, 36 or something. But awesome guys, incredibly knowledgeable, but the record is just, like, pure perfection as far as melodic death metal goes.
I just left it off because it was only one.
Yeah, because they've only done one so far.
Right.
That's right. We were supposed to do that, but I feel like if people didn't listen to the interview, like,
yeah.
I want more people to know about this record.
For sure.
That's why I got this poster, so you can see my face in front of the record all the time. So check it out. It was released on 20 Bucks Spin. It would have been like 2 years ago now, pretty much, close around there. Or no, it would have been about a year and a half, but either way. Check it out. Check out the interview for sure. But if you're a fan of like In Flames, At the Gates, Dark Tranquility, you know, Impaled Nazarene, all that.
Yeah, dude, you'll
Gothenburg, Sweetum, all that shit is just fucking phenomenal. Like if you like Horacle or Jester Race, you're going to love this.
Yeah, this kind of metal that's up my alley, dude.
Yeah, it's
shit's
like
good.
Shit that you
melodic.
Admire the guitar work in, but it's not like sort of an Yngwie Malmsteen solo where you're being like, dude, check me out. I can wail on guitar for like 16 minutes
and
pull out a Freebird solo.
They play them to the song, man.
Yeah. And I mean, Tanner, just him in general, like if you've heard Obsequii, like he really knows how to craft a song together to make everything work, like the melodies and shit. And he's just, I don't know, the guy's a great writer. Same with Carl. Everybody else in the band, too. Matt, like, he's...
Yeah, they all have different projects going on, and they're all amazing.
They all have multiple bands, and they're all, like, good. But Majesty's and Obsequii are the favorites of mine. So...
I can mention on a side note, a label mate that almost made it onto my list, but because I think they're getting better, is Worm.
Yeah,
but I think more people should know about that band. So
Worm was another one that
say.
I almost put it on, but I was like, man, Foreverglade was better than Gloomlord.
Yep. I mean, that's how I feel.
But, I mean, they're both great records. You know, Devil Master could have been another one. Like,
yep.
Lamp of Murmur could have been another one, but they're like slowly getting better. Stormkeep's first record
on
there.
That's why I left the metal off, because I knew that would make it easier for me.
Yeah. It was, I mean, we could have done a Just Metal debut,
sure.
But, so yeah, Majesty's Vast Reaches Unclaimed. Check out
awesome.
The interview, check out the album, pick it up at your local record store, order it if you don't already have it, because I know you'll fucking love it.
And it's 20 bucks spin, man, it's reasonably priced.
Yeah, it's like $20 or $25, I think.
So my next one, another surprise, but Elvis Presley's first record. Now, I know he's a singles,
surprising.
A singles, you know, guy, but I've had this particular copy since I was 16, 17, and it's just like an old repress from like 1960. But I'll show you if I can. I have like the insert, so you get all like, I love this cool shit. You know what I mean? Like in the history of now, granted, I do not have all of these fucking albums, and they made so many, they're not.
Well,
really
a lot
worth
of them
anything.
Were like compilations.
Yeah. And but, yeah,
we get a lot of people asking, like, oh, Elvis has got to be worth money. I'm like, yeah, you would think, but the stuff that is, yeah, it is, but it's few and far between. That's a Dynaflex, though, yeah. Isn't it? I can see it.
No, it's not a Dynaflex. It's almost.
It looks like it.
It might be. Maybe it is a Dynaflex.
That might have been, like, pre-Dynaflex, before they started calling it that.
I think that's what it is. But anyways, Blue Moon on here is, like, my favorite version of Blue Moon. Tutti Frutti's on here, Blue Suede Shoes, I Got a Woman. I mean, a lot of the singles, but it's just, it's the classic album, man. I mean, who else ripped this shit off that we know?
That's, yeah, The Clash.
Yeah. And it,
that's probably, like, the only Elvis record that I can really listen to.
Agreed.
I'm not, like, a big Elvis fan, but
I love The King, but if I'm gonna listen to an album, it's going to be this. Just, and I love the way it's recorded, and it, you know, in those old RCA studios, it's got like that haunting fucking, and that tape echo. Mm-hmm. It's like you can't replace or imitate that.
No,
you
because
come close,
that was,
but it's the room. There's too many factors, man.
There's a lot of music out there that its limitations at the time make it great.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And this album is definitely one that does. But I know that. That's kind of an old person one, but like fuck you.
My next is Obituary Slowly We Rot, which this is my favorite Obituary record. I wouldn't say it's their best per se, not that they've even had a bad one. I just think like John Tardy's vocals on this, like nobody else in that time period sounded like that. Actually, nobody even today sounds like that.
I don't think you can tell Obituary is Obituary.
He's got that like real slimy, like, I mean, I always called it slimy because of the slimy writing.
Yeah.
But it just sounds sludgy, grimy, slimy, like nasty. His voice is unmistakable, like right when you hear it. And I just seen him live not that long ago again, and it's like he just keeps getting better, dude. Like, the last time I seen him was, like, 2017, 18, somewhere around there when that self-titled record came out. And they were fucking phenomenal then, but when I just seen him again, like, it's
That's
like
so
the
awesome.
Guy just keeps getting better. And his voice, you would think, like, being 30-plus years into metal, singing that way, it would take a toll on your voice. But I think this is one of those, like, scenarios where it's just the way he sounds in general, and he's able to project that with his voice.
Yeah.
It's kind of like how, like, nobody...
He knows what he's doing to, like, keep it in check and not blow it out, I guess.
Yeah, but also, like, I think his natural voice has something to do with it. It's kind of like how nobody can rap like Andre 3000 because of his accent.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, Obituary hasn't done a bad record. I overheard some people at the concert that were like, oh, they had kind of a fall off there for a while. Like, I didn't like the self-titled album, or I didn't like this. I'm like, fuck, did you even listen to it?
Well, it's like I guess everybody's entitled to their own shitty opinion.
Yeah, even if it's wrong, I guess you can be entitled to it. But that was definitely like a staple in the death metal scene, especially the Florida death metal scene. If you haven't heard that record for whatever reason, you need to hear it if you're a metal fan.
Remember when they just put out the live version of it?
Yeah.
But they just like...
Well, it was live in studio.
Yeah.
Like live one take.
But it sounds fucking
that,
awesome,
like,
man. Those sounded good.
I would say that's how they sound live.
It was a little gimmicky, the sale point, but okay, you just said it. If they sound like that live, then...
Yeah, like I showed you that video on my phone.
Yeah.
Like they're fucking phenomenal live.
It's just
they don't,
dope, dude.
The quality there does not degrade whatsoever.
Oh, I just, we're getting used to it. I'm sorry. Sorry.
That's a good one.
You want to see the next one?
I know. I just seen it. But yeah, go ahead.
The 13 floor elevators. This is the psychedelic sounds. That's what they call it. This one's a repress on like Red. So it's not like worth anything. But I don't give a shit because it's fucking awesome. Garage rock. You're Gonna Miss Me is the big song on it, but you can just let it go. I love that. It's kind of like in the like the Sonics or the Rationals, things like that, that garage rock sound.
Mm.
And they weren't, and it's like a little psychedelic, but it's later on they really got fucking weird. You know what I mean? But
I know
this
that
is this is my favorite one.
I know that record in particular helped influence Ministry to start distorting his voice.
Oh, like really?
Al Jorgensen started distorting his voice because of that.
But I mean, I don't really, I can't really say too much about it except for, you know, it's fucking.
I think that's one
rock.
That's
you have to
very
listen to it.
Yeah, I think that's a very unknown kind of staple of that scene that people who don't know of it are going to be glad that they found it.
I would, yeah. When I first heard it, which was not very long ago, maybe 5-8 years ago, I was like, how have I not? Because I've always been a fan of like the Stooges, the Sonics, that kind of shit.
Yeah.
Found that and was like, oh my God. So,
yeah, they were kind of like pioneers of garage rock, really. My next is, oops, I guess I did have another hype sticker. My next would be like the American counterpoint to Never Mind the Bollocks, at least in my opinion. Dead Boys, Young, Loud, and Snotty came out right around the same time. To me, it's like one of the, it's kind of like a staple punk rock album.
Dude,
like you need to, you
again,
need to
I
hear
it
if
but
you
I would have brought it.
Yeah, I was like, fuck, I don't know if Jeremy's going to put
bring
that on
anyway.
There or not, but I was like, I'm going to bring it anyway. Maybe we'll have the same, but I mean, they were out of Cleveland, Ohio. They weren't based in New York, but they did a lot of playing in New York. So I think sort of like the Dayton family, since they were in a less hotspot area, they weren't as well known. I mean, yeah, like punk rock people know about them, but I've met people that are, you know, older guys that were hanging out at CBGBs and shit that never heard of the Dead Boys. So I think it just might have been
like
time and place type of thing.
Everybody knows who the fucking Ramones are, but nobody knows about the Dead Boys. Which is sad.
I guess
that's not completely true, but like you said.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the Ramones are a household name, whereas the Dead Boys are not. Like, if you look on the Rolling Stones list of best debut albums ever, the Ramones' first record is number one. Dead Boys is not even in the 100. Or is it? It might be. I know Nevermind the Bollocks is in there, but I don't think Dead Boys was.
See, I left. I also didn't bring those because of the single album thing.
Yeah, well, Dead Boys had to, though. We've Come for Your Children.
Oh, that's true. That's true.
Lords of the New Church would have been another good one to put on there, but I don't have that.
I left that one, too. My next one, though, since you have that one, I'm just going to, we're going to do it together.
Oh, is it, you brought
but
it,
I bought,
too?
I brought Stiv Bader's, though, first album.
Oh, okay.
Which every track on here to me is like
I thought you
solid.
Brought the same record.
I thought I brought the Dead Boys.
No, I thought you brought the same as my last one.
Oh, no, no. But I just thought bring Stiv. So if you like the Dead Boys, you'll like this.
And also Lords of the New Church, if you don't know about
them,
check that out.
Get that shit. But see, I don't, again, that's another one where I don't know if the first record's my favorite or not. Because it's like,
I would say it's the one I've heard the most. I don't know if it's,
and the so it's kind of like they have two, but they only have one. And then the other albums are like compilations of live shit and all. It's like, I wish there was a proper fucking release for that shit.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Stiv, anyway. Evil Boy. Fucking, I love that song. What's that fucking track? Million Miles Away. That's like, that's, everybody should go listen to that. If we had like some rights or whatever to play it, I would play it. But yeah, this is just a repop on Bop Records.
Bop
came out in 1980.
All right, my last one is also like my favorite debut, just altogether. and just one of my favorite albums in general altogether too. I think this is one of the best debut albums.
Yeah, I left that at home because I knew you were bringing it.
Yeah, particularly I like this version, the Found 77 Masters, but there is this demo sessions version as well.
Yep.
The mix sounds a little bit different because I know like before this came out, pretty much everybody in the band had their hands in it and they were all changing it like how they wanted to. I've sold this demo sessions one to somebody and they didn't like it. And I was like, huh, that's weird. But I went back and listened to it. And I guess if you don't like the other version, you probably won't like this one because you weren't like warmed up to the songs. But vocally, the demo one is a little more rocky.
Okay.
It just doesn't sound as... The vocals are a little more nasally and shit, I guess. It doesn't bother me, but, like, I guess if you were somebody that wasn't really a punk rock or rock and roll
type person. No, when I listen to that album, I put on the original one just because it's just the one I always listen to.
Yeah. I mean, this to me, like, is just, it's punk rock, but it's rock and roll, too. Like,
yeah,
definitely
no,
embodies
sure.
a lot of 50s rock because Johnny Thunders, yeah. Jerry Nolan, all those guys were really into that.
Fuck yeah.
But like Chinese Rocks, I think is like one of the greatest junkie songs ever made. Not to, you know, glamorize that or anything or try to like bring.
No, it's definitely like the
just
fucking
the way it's
Ramones
written.
Stole that shit too.
Yeah. And I mean, they did a cover of The Contours, Do You Love Me on here.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that song to begin with. It's already a little raspy, rocky kind of sounding for the year it came out in, but they just took it and made it like that much more amplified, that much more fun. And I don't know, just the whole record start to finish. Like I can put it on at any point in time and just enjoy the shit out of it, jump around the house.
Yeah, everybody needs to jam fucking some Johnny Thunders.
I think this is one of those records that should be like, if you've never heard it, it should be on those lists of like 100 albums to hear before you die.
Cause oh, for
it's
sure.
just that good to
for
me.
Sure.
Maybe not everybody else is really going to think the same, but
I
almost put
bring,
Richard Hell's Blank Generation on there too.
I left that at home. I almost, cause I thought you were going to do that.
I had it on there, but then I changed it. I had Television Marquee Moon also.
Okay. I didn't have that
because Marquee Moon is better than the Adventureland or whatever the second one was called.
Agreed.
Adventure. It's a good record, but
So Alone from Johnny Thunders. I was going to bring, but
I was
going to
bring that too,
Steve
but
instead.
Then I was like, Heartbreakers.
Because I thought it'd be too obvious for me to bring Johnny Thunders. So I was like, I don't want to do that.
Yeah. I mean,
and I left the Dolls, like I said, at home because I just posted about it. But if you haven't heard that fucking album, go listen to it right now.
That's the best thing Todd Rundgren's ever done
yep.
for music. I can't stand that guy's
yep.
music, but he executive produced that record and got it out there. But yeah, New York Dolls. I'm going to say this as a hot take. So if you listen to Aerosmith ripped off the New York Dolls completely and made it to where the stuff that they were doing, like New York Dolls were ahead of their time. So like Steven Tyler pretty much just jacked all that, pitched it to the record label and it worked for them. But for the New York Dolls, they pretty much struggled all of their careers. I mean, David Johansen does a bunch of like, doo-wop kind of weird random shit now.
Fucking Poindexter, bro.
Yeah. Yeah. But like Johnny Thunders, like throughout his whole life, he never got any like recognition. Every point that he seemed like he was about to kind of break through,
something happened, yeah.
And I mean, yeah, he was a horrible junkie. Like that's the life
There's
you live. That's what you're going to
get. A great documentary out called Looking for Johnny. And in that documentary, a former girlfriend says, like, you know, because he loved Keith Richards so much. So he's like, what? Keith Richards is a junkie? And
yeah.
his old lady at the time or whatever is like, yeah, but he was rich and a rock star first. You
right.
know, like he kind of
yeah,
like.
And Johnny Thunders
it.
Like developed a habit before he became a rock star.
Yeah.
And he didn't even have long enough in life to become a rock star because he died so young. I mean, Keith Richards is, like, in his fucking 80s or something.
Yeah, it's
he's
like,
still
how is
alive.
He still alive, right? And also, back to Steve Bader's, there's a documentary about Steve out that's really good because he passed away as well, but not from drugs.
Do you have one more still, or was that your last one?
I have one more.
I was like counting in my head, but I was like, I don't know.
The Velvet Undergrounds with Velvet Underground with Nico. Does that throw you off a little bit? I don't know. 1967 came out on the Verve. This is a repop.
Yeah, you can tell by how shiny it is.
Yeah, it's shiny. Still has the peel, which I'm not going to peel. It honestly doesn't sound all that great, but it's Lou Reed and John Cale and Nico, so it can sound a little meh, and I'm not going to pay.
I mean, it was the 60s. Plus, if you want an original copy
of
that,
it's ridiculous.
That's clean and playable, it's insane.
Ridiculous. So, yeah, anybody gets a chance. This is kind of, again, back to...
I've never liked that record.
No? Now, see, I'm a huge
fan. I've really tried
of Nico.
To also. Like, I appreciate their influence. Like, Lou Reed was a huge influence on rock, punk, yep. Anything, all that stuff. The look, the sound, etc.
Like, opens up.
I don't know. I just never liked the guy. Like, his songs are just kind of boring to me. And maybe that's, like, one of those things that'll change down the road, but...
There's Heroin. That's considered one of the best fucking Junkie songs. And then, of course, Lou Reed also wrote...
And that might be one of those things I gotta go back and listen maybe. To it. Because it's been a few years, but...
But I will definitely, like, Femme Fatale, Sunday Morning, I'll definitely say that Nico is not for everybody. And...
Yeah, she's an acquired taste.
Yeah, and it's like her albums, like, you know, that I've gotten from like Record Store Day, like this, the past record. I'm like, I'm not even gonna attempt it because it came out in like '86, and she was a very, very rough. So they just, you know, they're very hit or miss as far as sound goes. But the underground, like, I mean, they influenced everybody.
Oh, yeah.
And I just...
I mean, that whole scene
I almost put Jimi Hendrix on here, too. But.
I was kind of expecting you to, but I don't know. That's another one where he, like, yeah, his debut was great, but there's better stuff, and the debut was kind of...
Mm-hmm.
It's been talked about to death. It's been played to death. What else can you really say about it?
I like the Velvet Underground's second album called White Light, White Heat, but there's no Nico. And... So it's a whole different sound. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's almost like a different record. But this would be my, you know, favorite one. But that's all I got, man.
I was, before we start to wrap up here, I was going to put Sade's Diamond Life on there.
I left that. I thought you would do that, too.
I just really like that, like, she wrote the song, How Am I Gonna Make It, like, on the back of an unpaid bill. And, like,
that's awesome.
That's, like, what made her make it. I always thought that was a really cool story because, like, how coincidental is that would happen? I mean, that would happen one in a million times.
Yeah,
so.
It's cool, like, crazy fucking stories like that, man.
Yeah, and there was, I don't know, I had a list, but I'm not going to take up too much time going through all of it, but there was a lot that, it was harder, actually, than I thought to narrow it down.
Yeah,
but I tried to keep it not common.
And that's why if I was like, okay, if I cut out hardcore and metal... Then it's like, it made it easier for me, and then I figured it'd throw you off, and you'd be like, why are you bringing in Dwight Yoakam, dude? I'm like, I love it, dude. I mean,
I don't listen to it all the time, but it threw me way off. I was not expecting
it. It's fucking
dope,
dude.
But I have heard you talk about it now that you bring it out, I remember.
And it's just, you know, it's like, I used to listen to it a lot more when I used to drink, too, I guess. Would you know what I mean?
Well, that, like, twangy country shit, like, that's good. Drinking music. I don't know. It, like, but I think the same way that, like, Cypress Hill is, like, good stoner music.
Yeah.
Dwight Yoakam, I think, because they were, like, that was their, like, primary substance at the time, probably.
And when I heard it, I was getting pretty loaded at that time. Shout out to Cole Cummings. He introduced me to Dwight. But
I might have to ask him about that tomorrow.
He knows what's up.
But unless you have anything else, we'll wrap stuff up here. Let us know in the comments some of your favorite debuts. We, like I said, we tried to do this on Instagram, and it was didn't really work out. So hopefully this one went over better. But let us know in the comments some of your favorite debuts. We're curious to hear about them. Or even some that you hated, too, would be great.
Oh, yeah, dude. We could totally do this again with... Debuts
albums
that sucked.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
But yeah, I don't have anything else. I just appreciate everybody listening.
Yeah,
and keep following us, Daggerface Duval, Soundwave Slave, and the podcast.
Follow us on YouTube too. Now that we're going to be doing more video episodes, we'll make sure to keep up to date on all that. And all of our social media links are in our episode descriptions. As always, shop Blast Beats Vinyl. The website link is in our episode description. You can use our promo code NOISE for 10% off your first order. They always have a ton of awesome metal stuff. I tell you that all the time. So hopefully you've gone and checked it out by now, because they really are the best one-stop metal shop.
And it is reasonable. If you can't find, there's shit you cannot find, and he'll have it at a reasonable, fair price. It's not like super boutique. Like,
yeah, nothing,
check it out, man. You save 10%.
You're never spending like $100 on a record, no. Unless it's like a box set or something like that.
That's a whole other story.
But anyway, thanks for listening, and peace out.